Hello, I'm Father Mitch Pacwa, and welcome to EWTN Live. We bring you guests from around the world. And our guest tonight goes all around the world. He works with pro-life and pro-family leaders in 116 countries to proclaim and advance the gospel of life. He's traveled around the world as the president of Human Life International, working with Vatican officials, clergy, and civil leaders, promoting human dignity and the sacredness of human life. And he's here tonight to discuss how the beauty of marriage, children, and dedicated family life can counter the decline in global fertility rates, as well as the social, political, and cultural problems that come with it. So please welcome tonight our guest, Father Shannon Bouquet. Father Shannon,
great to be with you, Father.
Good to have you too. Bienvenue. And it's been a while since you've been here.
Yes.
But this is a problem that is the opposite. I was talking to one of the young men in our studio audience. One of his science teachers said they should make everybody stop having children for 40 years.
Wow.
I don't know what science he's following, but it doesn't sound very good. The problem that you hear about in the media is that there's overpopulation.
Right.
What's the real situation going on?
Sure. And I think, you know, most of our audience would, because the narrative is really controlled by mainline legacy media. So what people are kind of hearing, you know, is a consistent narrative that really is against life. And it's the challenge is how to pierce through that narrative. So, for example, as I mentioned some numbers, maybe some of our audience might be shocked to hear. So in the United States, you know, so let's start with what is the replacement level? So we're talking about 2.1, which means three children per family, which would be the average number of children a woman would have in her lifetime. And that's still a very small number, especially when you step back just 50 years ago, when the average size in the United States was about 5 to 6 as an average size. So today it's 1.6. So we're not even replacing ourselves, which means they're not having two children. And so as a result, you know, we're seeing the change in population. We're watching an aging population, but also in Asia, for example, it's about 1.9. Europe as a whole, 1.5. You get into Africa, which is one that is still growing, 4.2. But then you get into Latin America, 1.8. So, which means the majority of our world is not replacing themselves. So the population is beginning to shrink. And China, let me give you an example. People like to hear about China at times because they think it's really the population is still growing, which it is. But it's starting now to have the impact when the number is 1.4. So, and you look at Korea, 1.0, Japan, 1.2. So around the world, we have a fertility problem. And really, if people just step back in time, 1968 would be a very important time in history. So Paul Ehrlich, you know, the population bomb, which I know our audience should also remember, something else happened in 1968, which would be very important within the church, Humanae Vitae. And so
explain what Humanae Vitae is.
So on human life. So what Pope Paul VI was confronting obviously was a period of time where people were looking at, you know, the influence of contraception, the availability of contraception, and also the issues affecting, no doubt, the population bomb with Paul Ehrlich was affecting how people looked at human life, thinking that the world was overpopulated, we're having too many children, which is all false. You know, one thing that's important, even today, Paul Ehrlich's calculations have all been debunked. He's never been successful in any one of his claims, and yet people still quote him, you know, as some great scientist, which is still around today. So maybe the young man in the audience, maybe his professor or teacher is reading too much of Paul Ehrlich, you know.
Well, as a matter of fact, just so folks understand the importance of that book, both that book and Humanae Vitae, the Pope's encyclical on human life, came out as the birth control pill Correct. Was in the process of being tested and approved for more general use. I think it was at a second or third stage Exactly. of approval. And it was becoming known, and would, and a few years later, it would be in, on the market.
That's right, and would make a, obviously a radical impact, you know, still effect to this day.
Oh, absolutely. So,
but definitely, you know, how what Paul Ehrlich, you know, was dealing with was really just really kind of gaslighting this conversation. Mm-hmm. And but it, as a result, it affected not only, you know, the scientific community, it began to affect legislation, policy making. Here in the United States, for example, I mean, our audience, I hope they might be familiar with Richard Nixon, President Richard Nixon, and Henry Kissinger. And this is a document that emerged in 1974. And it's a very important document. And the reason why I'm making note of it, because its impact is still felt today in our state policy. And it's a study, it's called the National Study, Security Study Memorandum 200. So it, basically it's a document that's looking at the population that Paul Ehrlich is raising alarms on. And so the United States is saying, now how is this going to affect our security? How does it affect our ability for natural resources? How is it going to affect how we relate with other countries, especially, you know, countries that are what they call LDCs, lower developing countries? How do we get to those resources? How does this affect the United States? And so what you find, and these are some of the organizations and entities in the United States that are, we all would be familiar with. So who was involved in this policy? The CIA, USAID. So obviously this is the United States Agency for International Development that's in the news at this very moment yeah. of time. Also involved was the State Department and other governmental agencies. And so they use the language of security. How do we protect the security of the United States? So this document and its policy, and what it did is it looked at other countries and said, okay, we can't go in with weapons, we can't go in with, you know, armament and take over countries, but we can go in with a message of how do we keep their populations low, mm-hmm. and how do we sustain those lower populations so that they in turn will not have need of their own natural resources, but then we can negotiate how we can obtain those resources. Mm-hmm. So you can hear now exploitation, you know, using people, not promoting human flourishing, and the opposite is what we hear with Humanae Vitae and with Paul VI speaking about the beauty of family life, the beauty of conjugal love, the openness to human life, the trusting in God and God's divine providence. And but also in Humanae Vitae, especially in the paragraphs 15 through 17, Paul VI makes note of consequences, what happens if we begin to embrace, you know, an antinatalist position, an anti-life position, and what will it do? So what we call great prophecies, you know, one of which was, you know, how is government going to use population control methodology around the world and mm-hmm. In our own country as well? And so what we see with the NSSM 200 is that reality. You know, the government using its might, its leverage, which would move into modern history. Pope Francis himself addressed this many times. Pope Benedict in Caritatis and Veritate addressed it several times. You know, Pope John Paul II addressed it, and the exploitation of developing countries. And I see it with my own eyes. You know, I'm watching.
Yeah, because you travel to a lot of countries,
right.
And many of them are very poor.
Correct.
And they have not developed their resources.
Correct.
And especially when Nixon and Kissinger wrote this, the context was the Cold War was full on,
right.
and there was no good end in sight.
Right.
And the war plans against Soviet Union were, how can we do this with as few nuclear weapons as possible?
Right.
But they just did not have another way out.
Exactly.
And so they wanted everybody else's material.
That's right. And I think that's, you know, when you look at it, when you first read, you can see the national security. And this is a valid question. How do we protect the interest of the United States as a sovereign country? But what got lost in here is how does this impact other nations? What are these long-term policies going to reveal to us? And what we still see today is tentacled into so many of our state policies is population control methodology. We see it at the United Nations. We see it with the United Nations Population Fund. We see it with so many other non-governmental organizations working around the world. You know, even our own country, sadly, is very heavy-handed, you know, in this conversation still today.
Well, one of the things that has happened repeatedly, I first learned about it in President Clinton's administration, but it happened again later on, especially in President Obama's administration, that you could get aid from us, financial aid,
right,
if you were willing to let us teach you how to kill your children.
Correct.
And that's a blunt way to put it.
Right.
But it's an accurate way.
It is. And it is. And you know, and what you see is what you brought up a little earlier, Father, was, you know, when you move around the countries that are still developing, you know, and their economic development is slow, you know, you look at the suffering, you look at the struggle, you look at the poverty, and you know, in what, like Pope John Paul, Pope Benedict, Pope Francis, and no doubt Pope Leo now will begin to address as well, is what is our response? You know, it's not the number of children that make them poor. It's the lack of resources that they do need, and infrastructure. And you know, and as one of our directors has often said out of Tanzania, he oversees all of HLI's work in English-speaking Africa. And you know, we contraception doesn't change the electrification, doesn't bring us cleaner water, doesn't bring new highways, new hospitals. It just makes larger poor families into small poor families.
Yep.
And so the real issue here is what John Paul brought up in Centesimus Annus, the 100th document celebrating the 100th anniversary of Rerum Novarum, you know, where he really kind of looks at how do we share as a developed nation, you know. And as I'm using these terms, I'm not a big fan of them in lower developed nations, you know, developed nations, but this is how they speak of them economically. But how do we as a nation that has been so blessed with technology and resource, how do we assist other nations to be able to help themselves? So what kind of resources can we bring that help human flourishing, help true, authentic human development without exploitation? And I remember Pope Benedict XVI would get very much raise this problem, because you would see money being used, resources being used. You know, we remember many of the phrases, you know, if you're willing to accept contraception, abortion, support now today, you know, the whole transgender issue, money will flow. We'll give you a resource. And I mean, being in many of the countries around the world, I see our signs up, USAID, I see UK aid, I see other countries with their aid signs, and they're always surrounded by DEPRA PROVERA signs, DEPRA PROVERA. It's an injectable that is placed into the arm of a woman who is of childbearing years, and basically it just provides contraceptive hormones to her body to prevent her from conceiving. And so it's very dangerous, it has many side effects, and without any care to many of the women around the world, this is being given to them. We even know of cases where multiple kinds of contraception are being employed by women because they're not educated on what these are. So, and what happens in some cases, people who are selling or making the products available, you know, get paid for every product they get out in the market. And so they're not interested in educating, informing. We've even seen where the whole information inside of the boxes have been removed, you know, so there's no material to help educate any of this. So it's really exploitation at its worst.
And what a lot of folks don't know is that those sheets of paper inside, you get that with every medicine you ever buy.
That's correct.
But the sheets of medicine with the various forms of birth control let you know of side effects.
Right.
They take that out.
Right.
They don't let people know that there are side effects, some of which can be very serious.
Right.
And they don't let them know that there is, what, by their standard, a failure rate, that it's not the pill or anything else,
right,
is 100% effective.
That's correct.
That's, you know, sure. And they don't let them know that either.
That's correct. Which means then you see how abortion becomes the next recourse.
Yes.
And so this is, this, and sadly, you know, many times meeting with, you know, whether ecclesial leaders, church leaders, or meeting with civil leaders, a lot of times, you know, they speak very poorly of our country because they see what we're doing and the methodology that we're using and the rationale behind it.
Yeah.
And what's so tragic is our country does a lot of good. We do a tremendous amount of charity that's not connected to any of these evil things. And unfortunately, that gets lost in the midst of the things that we do that are really immoral and very highly illicit. And it's a challenge for us at HLI because when you're in these environments and you're bringing a message of the church's teaching on marriage, family life, conjugal love, openness to human life, they said, aren't you from America? You know, you're the ones that actually are telling us to have less children. You're the ones, the U.S.
Right.
And so we have to really counter it and say it's tragic that, mm-hmm. yes, many in our government believe that the world is still overpopulated. I don't believe they believe that as much as they still look at things purely from what can we benefit from in this particular country? What are the resources we need? So when you look at the Kissinger report and you look at the 10 countries that it specifically named, Philippines was one of them, India was one of them. So today, you know, what are the countries named? You know, so how had these policies infiltrated current state policies?
Mm-hmm.
You know, in one of my articles, I kind of write to President Trump, you know, the newly elected president. And, you know, and we know that he's been, his administration been dealing with USAID. We read the headlines. But what's never mentioned is what fed USAID to where it is today. You know, how did it get co-opted into doing something that originally it wasn't meant to do, what it was not employed to do? And it really is how the Kissinger report, this document really changed the approach of state policy, mm-hmm. international policy, how it affected how we fund the United Nations, what programs we're funding, how much money is allocated toward that funding. Or maybe like organizations like International Planned Parenthood, you know? And so these are all tentacled toward that document, that document that began in 1974. And so what I wrote in the article and, you know, in kind of writing to the president, let's address the systemic issue. Let's pull back and look at what really is driving this conversation. And how do we really address authentically national security issues? How do we address that without exploitation and manipulation of those in the developing world or really anywhere around the world? And so it's important for people to really understand what's driving this conversation. And like I said, the writing of the Population Bomb by Paul Ehrlich is still very much in the mindset. I have friends that are in their 70s, 80s, mm-hmm. who remind me what they were taught in school. And many times we sit over a cup of coffee and they kind of debate with me and saying, well, the world is overpopulated. I said, well, no, it's not. And so then what are the consequences, you know, as we depopulate?
Mm-hmm.
What are the consequences? Not just, you know, it's not just a church issue. It's not just a Catholic Church concerned, you know, because there's an assault on marriage and conjugal love and the openness to human life. Yes, that is very real. But what are the other consequences involved? How does it affect social systems? How does it affect countries being able to take care of its own people? Mm-hmm. As in our own country, taxes are used to take care of infrastructure, education, medical care, mm-hmm. you know, a litany of sources that are out there. Well, what happens when you start inverting what we call a population pyramid? So what that means is that when you look at a pyramid, the very bottom of that pyramid, the lower platform, is where your younger population should be, where your dominant population going up the pyramid. And this is your tax base. These are who are the young people working, paying their taxes, feeding the system. Well, if you invert the pyramid, and now basically you have your younger population at the top of your pyramid, and your older population, your aging population, it makes up the dominant percentage. Well, what are the consequences of that? Well, people reach a certain age, they're not paying as much taxes. They're not working as many hours anymore. They're not paying into the system.
Right.
They're drawing from the system. So we see this in California as a good example. You know, when we see people, how we pay for all our structures, you know, we don't, when people are moving out of the state, when less people are working, how do we keep the system moving? So that's just from a secular point, but the church is still concerned about that too, because we all live in society.
Yeah.
We all benefit from the infrastructures around us.
Mm-hmm.
So this affects everyone. And so it's a very important question. And how do we address it? How do we change the narrative? So how do we debunk the falsification? And then how do we then address, where do we go from here? How do we reinstate a different narrative?
I think this is something that's a very important part of the message that the church has for the modern world. I remember how Mr. Kissinger, last year I read a biography of him, and one of the things that he wanted was the population of the world to go down to the point of being only 50 million people. That's the size of California right. and Texas, but less than that.
Right.
It's less than California and Texas.
Right.
And that's his vision. And there's, I believe, Professor Singer. He was talking about 5 million people in the
right.
world. It hasn't been 5 million humans on the world since the Chalcolithic period. That, you know, about 5,000 and 4,000 BC.
Right.
This is highly problematic.
Right.
Who do they think is going to make their latte?
That's right.
You know, but at any rate.
Right. And also, you know, they're speaking about, well, who are those 5 million? And of
yeah.
course, they're speaking about themselves. It's
right.
it's that 1%, quote, you know, that the elite, you know, it's in a sense of how they look down at certain segments of the population. And, you know, if we look at this, there's also racial issues involved. There's discrimination 100%. Involved. There's the whole issue of eugenics involved in this.
Mm-hmm.
All this plays into this conversation. And you know, many times I'm, you know, accused in interviews of conspiracy. You know, you're just kind of making conspiracy theories. But this is a reality. This is what we're dealing with. I mean,
yeah.
even how Planned Parenthood has tried to cover up Margaret Singer's, you know, Singer's history and past, their founder.
Yeah.
You know, the whole eugenics, the whole racial
issues.
Yeah, I mean,
just to put it in her own words,
right.
that blacks, she said, blacks are a weed
right.
that have to be removed.
Correct.
No, they're not. You know, that and see, I think they're, and she said other things that were, you know, as bad. That's why she used to go speak to the Ku Klux Klan
right.
National Convention.
Exactly.
You know, I'm surprised they don't talk about that. At any rate, this is where we have to take a look at what the church's response is.
Right.
This is a serious problem, and it's deeply ingrained. But this is where we need to talk about, first, the promotion of marriage and family in marriage. This, because right, and I say family in marriage because right now in the United States, and I suspect that's true in a few other countries, the majority of children are born to unmarried parents.
Right, especially in the Western world, in the developed world.
Yeah, right, right. I was thinking Australia, United States for sure.
Correct.
I don't know
in
about
many countries
Europe.
In Europe.
Yeah. And we have to start off with, you know, that marriage really makes a difference. The rhetoric that marriage is just how I feel at a time, or it's just a piece of paper at City Hall, or making your parents happy by going to church, that's not what it's about.
Right.
Marriage includes a wide range of goods for that affect the parents themselves
right.
and the children.
Yes.
This is not something that is just, well, it's a nice, what nice people do. It's what sane people do.
Exactly. Well, it's what our church has taught so beautifully and consistently teaches. I mean, the family is the cell upon which society is built. I mean, just quoting John Paul, but quoting the Catechism of the Church. But just, you know, numbers are always telling. So in 1960, 18 to 29-year-olds, you know, about 72% of people 18 to 29 were married in 1960 in the United States. This is the number from the United States. In 1974, that number went down to 59%. In 2023, the number's down to 20%. So this is a very telling, but it does go back, you know, to this messaging. You know, so even with the population bomb and the messaging of that era, so as we keep moving forward and we keep making negative married life, family life, welcoming children, you know, the beauty of what the role of the family, we begin to preach a false feminism. We begin to demoralize fatherhood, motherhood. Just like today, we hear it so often. We take it for granted because it's in movies. It's on TV. It's in the commercials. I mean, we can continue to just demoralize these great goods, and we falsify them. And so,
in fact, one of the big patterns in this country is that the false feminism that's been taught has demoralized boys. And there's a book called The Boy Crisis.
Right.
And the concern is that you promote girls at the expense of boys until you get to the point where something like transgender is favored. Mm. And now you promote boys who consider themselves women and let them play against women and demoralize the women in their sports.
Exactly.
This is madness.
It is. It is.
So you end up demoralizing, and then we're surprised that depression is widespread
right.
among young people, especially males, but it's also among females.
Right. Yeah, and that's what makes the challenge, Father, so important of how do we, you know, bring, how do we model? Because so many of our young people are coming up, and here I'm speaking of countries in the West. So what I mean by the West are the developed countries. So Europe, most of Europe, United States, Canada, many countries in Latin America, Australia, Japan, New Zealand. So when you look at this and you realize this is a global issue,
yes.
and you're watching not only a global birth rate fall, but you're also watching divorce become accepted, you know, normalized in culture. The Philippines right now is one of the only countries that has not legalized divorce. That's being challenged as we speak tonight, you know. But what are the consequences of cohabitation? What are the consequences of divorce? What are the consequences of children being conceived out of wedlock, being raised in single homes? What are these consequences? And, you know, and even in the best of families, you know, the father, mother still struggles to model to their children. But, you know, but this is what the design that God created, the fidelity of marriage, the exclusivity of marriage, where children are raised and nurtured and loved, and where the communication of the faith is given and the modeling of love and sacramental love is given so that it passes on. In a sense, what we hear in sacred scripture, you know, teach this to your children and to your children's children from the book of Deuteronomy. It's
right.
just so important, but there's been a break. And so many of our young people don't have these models.
No.
Not even in their grandparents.
And, you know, one of the there's a series of consequences. If the parents are not married, there's a much lower, significantly lower likelihood that those children will finish high school.
Right.
There is a high likelihood they'll end up in trouble with the law. And that's why 85% of men and women in prison are the children of unmarried parents. And they're also extremely likely to be poor. Unmarried women with children are poor, and their children are poor yet.
Right.
That these are very concrete results that are shown for decades.
Right.
The famous article, Dan Quayle was right, when he talked about single motherhood not being a good idea.
Right.
There are hundreds and hundreds of studies showing this.
Exactly.
And this is where the church and all of us within the church have to communicate. This isn't just about a personal choice, but this is truly about, you know, Christ working to save society through our marriages.
Exactly, and through that beautiful family life. And
yes.
So it's interesting, again, as we look out in the consequences of our choices, you know, and the harms that it does to society, to individuals, to you know, our structures of society. And so, you know, and this is with something that I remember, you know, even Pope Francis addressing when we look at how we care for our sick, our dying, mm-hmm. the elderly. You know, Pope Leo just mentioned recently, you know, that we calling to families to model family life, to model marriage, mm-hmm. to generations that have no one to show this to them.
Exactly.
And so they're gravitating toward things because no one really has shown them the way.
Yeah.
And we also know that the woundedness of many people today who have come from these broken environments, you gave examples how it affects economically, the possibilities of people making bad decisions and ending up in jail. But, you know, those that have been able to overcome those hurdles, but still carry a wound of their mother abandoning them, their father abandoning
100%.
Them. You know, the one thing we often talk about in presentations on contraception, we talk about the linkage. You know, and how contraception breaks links, mm-hmm. because we're talking about a mentality, and that is, how does this mentality, this anti-life, this rejection of the beautiful design of God in conjugal love, the marital act. So we look at what a link does. So when man marries woman and woman marries man, there's a link that's pulled between them. But that linkage connects them. I'm going to use my hands. I'm a good Frenchman, you know. Yeah. And so, but those links then also link them now to her parents, his parents. So then when children are born as a result of this union, those links now are not only to their own mom and dad, but now to their grandparents,
yeah.
and to aunts and uncles and so forth.
Right.
But when you contracept and you prevent that life, it doesn't just prevent a child from being born. It breaks the link between the husband and wife. Breaks the link between the husband with his in-laws and her in-laws, because inevitably it just severs the relationship within the family. Yeah. And it also creates a mentality that, how do I care for someone in their older? Why would I care for people in my family when, you know, it's all about myself? It's a self-centered, you know, mentality.
Yeah.
And it's a real challenge today because people look at marriage or look at human sexuality, it's pleasure-oriented.
Right.
It's self-absorbed when it was never designed for that.
Right.
It has its own good, a truth to its own act, mm-hmm. and a nature to itself that's been lost.
Yeah.
And so how do we bring that into a world, you know, into a society, especially in the developing world? Now,
We actually have to take a little bit of a break. We're running out of time.
Sure.
So let's take that break now. We'll come back. If you want to find out more about Human Life International, you can simply go to hli.org, hli.org, and find out more of this. Lots of information and work. And also, we talked about the Kissinger Report. You can download it, and it's free.
It's free.
It's the Kissinger Report, Blueprint for Global Depopulation. It's a free ebook, and it's available at hli.org/free-ebook. So hli.org/free-ebooks, and you can go online for those and see for yourself. This is where government policy came from. And some of our politicians promote it more than others, but it's out there. We'll be back with your questions and comments, so please stay with us. We'll be right back. got two questions. All right, welcome back. And if you are interested in this topic, and it's an important one, you can watch the Living a Culture of Life podcast with our guest, Father Shannon Bouquet, and it's at hli.org. I mean, HLI really has an enormous amount of information available, and it's information that really has a big impact. You ready for some questions?
Sure.
All right, let's start off with Steve in Oregon. Steve, what can we do for you?
Father, I was going to ask, when you have less children being born, will that affect God's plan for mankind?
Well, yeah, so we look to the future of the human race.
Sure.
What effect might that have to have fewer children?
Of course. You know, so if we just look within a single family structure, and we have examples of this, and I'm going to turn to Africa, which I was going to mention a little early before the break, and that is when you look in Africa and you see where family life is still welcomed, where children are still very much a beautiful blessing to a family, what happens is the family supports each other. They care for each other. They help each other through difficult times, you know, through struggles, and also through celebratory times. They celebrate as a family. And so as we age and as maybe illness affects a family, people work together. They accompany each other. They help each other. And so definitely the size of a family is very influential, very impactful, but not just to the immediate family, but to the community at large. Mm-hmm. I mean, so I myself, you know, come from a large family, you know, in an extended family. And we were taught these values of care for the neighbor, outreach to the neighbor, you know, being mindful of others. You know, this was taught to us. And, you know, and even though we ourselves, you know, had our own needs and our own expectations, but we were, you know, very much instilled with the common good, mm-hmm. the responsibility to others, the outreach to others, charity toward others. These are great goods that larger families promote as well.
I've often thought of this in terms of St. Catherine of Siena. Mm. She was the 22nd out of 24 kids that her mother and father had.
Right.
And can you imagine if they had said, honey, do you want to stop at 20?
Right.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Or Father.
And then she'd be, you know, we would never have
right.
one of the great saints of the church. Right.
Even HLI, Father Marx was one of 23 children.
Is that right?
So
Father Marx is the founder
of Human Life
International.
So and so it's, you know, it's so important, you know, to this openness to God's plan, openness to what's the first commandment that people forget? It's be fruitful and multiply. This is the first command
that wasn't
of God.
A math problem.
No. And so it's important to, you know, that people see the great good. And I think people have, because the narrative has been so strong, the messaging has been so successful, that people really look at other people who have more than two children as doing something harmful, doing something very harmful to society, which is completely false.
And this is something that families I personally know who have six, seven, eight kids, sometimes more, will, you know, be in the store with their kids, and complete strangers will give them a lecture. You shouldn't have so many kids.
Right.
That's really not their business.
Right. No.
You know, that's between them and God here. If He gives them that many blessings, then.
Exactly.
And besides, the other thing I tell them, all right, you get that person to choose which one you're going to give back. You know. You know, that would be absurd.
That's right.
You know, that's just crazy. We have another question from our studio audience. Sir, where are you from?
I'm from Birmingham, Alabama.
Great. Good to have you here.
Thank you,
and
Father.
And your question?
So my question, which is a little bit related to what you were just speaking about, I'm curious. The first half of the show, we talked about a lot of cultural or governmental forces and cultural forces that are encouraging an anti-family sort of mentality. But how much do you find that even though the church is teaching on matters like abortion, contraception, fidelity and permanence in marriage, as much as that might be cutting against the grain, how much do you find it's actually a source of attraction for people to be drawn into the church? In other words, it's a tool for evangelization rather than a stumbling block for the message.
Right. Yeah,
thank you.
Thank you very much. And, you know, this is probably one of the largest challenges in facing the church around the world, but especially in the West. Because one, my experience has been in the 14 years of serving HLI, but a priest of now 33 years, nearly 33 years, you know, preaching the church's perennial teaching on marriage, why contraception violates the great good of marriage, is not really preached enough. And very seldomly do I hear it preached. And when meeting with people around the country, they themselves admit it's not preached. And so the first challenge really is to address why. Because it is a great good that we are promoting, the good of marriage, the good of conjugal love. But we have to show why this is a good, because people have lost their sensitivity to it. And as a priest who's preached this, having had people walk out of Mass, walk out of the, because they're so foreign to them, and many times they take offense at it.
Yes.
So the real challenge that I found was, then how do I begin to build through catechesis, through formation in the parish? How do we bring that then to a diocesan level? How does we then bring it to a more of a national level? And this is something that, you know, that we do at HLI globally, trying to instill not only a different narrative, but how to create structures within parishes, within diocesan structures, within family life offices, respect life offices. How do you bring the message, which is a message of goodness, truth, beauty, to the forefront? Mm-hmm. And one way that we've done this is by, again, modeling. You bring families forward. Interesting, you know, Pope Leo, in speaking about the family, talked about, you know, St. Therese of Lisieux's mom and dad. He actually mentioned some of the blesseds as examples of family life.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we have to do the same thing. You know, expose, you know, our parishes to family life. We have to expose them to it, show them that, you know, and not so much putting people on pedestals. But one thing I often would do is speak about many of those larger families in the parish and having them maybe at different little workshops in the parish. How does having a larger family, how does that affect you economically? Because people, that's what they want to ask. How is it going to affect me economically? How can I raise a larger family? What could I do do I have to change my work? Do I have to have four jobs? How do I do all this? And what you hear is reprioritizations. Mm-hmm. You hear a different focus, mm-hmm. a different value that you're advocating for. And people, this is new to so many people mm-hmm. because they don't see it.
Right.
You know, and so that's one of the things we try to do in our parish structures.
Okay. We have another caller, Richard online. Richard, where are you calling from?
Steve Christo Ray. I'm calling from Baton Rouge, Louisiana.
Father Bouquet. Good
Father
to
Bouquet
have you here.
Comes from the call from the Holocaust Memorial. American
oh,
Holocaust
very good.
Memorial. Yes. Well, Father, since the death camps, the abortion death camps closed in Louisiana 2.5 years ago, I've been going to Planned Parenthood, and we've handed out thousands of Human Life Alliances, the truth about Planned Parenthood. Not one person there, and just about everybody takes the brochure, has ever heard that contraception is evil, that, you know, courtship and marriage and the blessing of children, how God wants it. And these are everybody that just about goes into that Planned Parenthood tells me they go to church. So, you know, you're right. Nobody ever has heard, of the thousands of people I've talked to in the last couple of years, has ever heard anything about sacramental marriage, the blessing of children. But what's more important is this. You know, it takes 8 to 12 years to become a priest, the sacrament of Holy Ghost. It takes a couple weekends to get married. We need to prepare our children for the sacrament of marriage. There should be a marriage program. There should be sacramental marriage. Just like in Louisiana, during the Foster administration, he had the abstinence programs and covenant marriage in all the public schools. That's a necessity. Without that, we lost. Death camps are going to come back because the father and mother of all this murder is diabolical sexual disorientation. And worse yet, the women that I talk to that go into Planned Parenthood, they say they never heard the idea that it's an evil not to have a father.
Yeah, well, that's one of the things, and right. And there are even economic disincentives right. to having Father on. You can get more financial aid from the federal government right. if there is no Father on. That's right. that has to be fixed.
Right.
That should be something that we work on to rectify.
Right. Well, like our question before as well is, you know, how do we, you know, and this is again, we strive to do on the international scene is how to work with priests who know what the church teaches, but how to help them to articulate that teaching in their parish settings, mm-hmm. how to advocate for the great good, how to speak to the great good, mm-hmm. and to really want the good for the people that they love and care for. Mm-hmm. I mean, priests want the good for their parishioners. This is what they seek. And so, but this is a very volatile subject. It's very personal. You know, again, you kind of that narrative is, you know, don't get into my bedroom, don't get into my economic situation.
I remember people saying, I don't want the Pope in my bed. Keep the Pope out of my
right.
bedroom.
Right.
I said, he doesn't want to be there. Don't flatter
right.
yourself.
No, that's right.
But what he wants is for God to be there.
Exactly.
That's
exactly.
the issue.
It's so like one time I asked a priest in speaking about Humanae Vitae, who said to me, I really don't like the document. And I said, well, Father, let's have a cup of coffee. What don't you like about the document? What is it about it? What about this document? It's so beautiful. It's so rich.
Yeah.
It's so filled. So in a way, by helping our priest, helping our lay leaders who are involved with marriage prep and involved with, you know, supportive couples, how do we, you know, really instill a culture? That's what we're after, right? We're actually trying to counteract the culture of death with the culture of life.
Yes.
How do we, you know, inculcate this within the hearts of our people who have become desensitized to these great goods? So it means we have to expose it. In a sense, all very similar in a way to how people of a certain percentage of our Catholic population do not believe in the true presence. So how do we respond to that? How do we re-educate? How do we form? So, and we're seeking ways of evangelization. Well, this is the same approach. We have to re-evangelize within the church itself and to really lift up the good and expose the good and talk about the good. And change the approach that people have toward human sexuality. I mean, as priest, I mean, I've been asked this several times, Father, I don't know how you don't have sex.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I hear it in airplanes, I hear it in airports, and, you know, so people are so fixated, you know, on a physical reality, which is a great good within the proper context and
right.
the proper purpose of God's design, but it's a beauty, it's a good, it's something that God has created. But it has a purpose, it has a design. And so when you rupture that, it causes great harm.
Yeah.
And so it can be lived, and it can be lived beautifully and joyfully. And this is where the modeling of couples in their fidelity, in the joy of their marriage is so important.
Yeah. And you know, those of us who live chastity and celibacy can say to people, I don't think I could wait until marriage. Oh, you can. You won't explode. I can assure you. We have another question from our studio audience. Young man, where are you from?
Fountain Hills, Arizona.
Good to have you here. And what's your question?
So, as you said, Father, like people here having like one, two or more kids is just like messed up nowadays. And like if I talk about the beauty of people having like six or more children in a family, they're often like, whoa, that's not like financially feasible, emotionally feasible, physically feasible. So what's the best plan of action for talking to people like that? Because sometimes they're Catholic, sometimes they're not.
Thank you very much. So, you know, there are a couple of layers here in for us to look at. So let's look at, you know, how do we respond, you know, to people who pose that kind of situation. So what I mentioned earlier, it's values. So it's important is what do we value? Mm-hmm. And, you know, being raised in a larger family, your values have to become very clear. You know, we may not have always the nicest things. You might not always have the newest car. You may not always have the biggest house. You might not have certain amenities. But the value.
And if you're younger, you don't get a lot of new clothes.
Right, that's right. You might have some hand-me-downs. And people are afraid of these things because, sure. again, it's conditioning. We've been so conditioned, you know, and so we have to uncondition people the way they think to change their mentality. Yeah. But it really is values. It's about values. Now, on the side of how do we instill this within culture as well is another way, and that is government's role. Government has a role in changing the narrative too. Mm-hmm. So the high taxation on families, this is unjust. Mm-hmm. We need to look at how do we promote tax incentives, you know, in a sense of lowering taxes for families, being able to good medical care, lowering the cost of medical care, you know, being able to encourage, you know, daycares that, you know, systems and so forth.
And at the other end of life, for people who are on Social Security, right. if a widow and widower remarry, they can lose
right.
their Social Security right. benefits by being married. So they live together right. without marriage.
That's right. Unacceptable.
And they get punished right. for financially right. if they do get married.
Exactly.
And this is something that's
another injustice.
Acceptable.
Exactly. And so this is where there is a place for government, you know. And now when I mentioned about incentivizing, just as a little side note, Russia, China, many countries have tried to incentivize by offering, you know, money, you know, but it really doesn't work. So, but what has to happen is the government does have to have a role and a very positive role of how it sees the family
yeah.
as pivotal in building society.
One more call. We have Joseph on the line. Joseph, what can we do for you today?
Hello?
Hi.
Hi, Father Mitch. Yeah. My wife and I, we met on a blind date. 10 months later, we were married. We were married almost 40 years. We had 7 children, all blessings. You know, 2 were very ill. Total of 11 pregnancies. But getting to the point the father of okay is that we had a lot of criticism, a lot. I mean, every time my wife was pregnant, we would, you know, hear a lot of sarcasm. And exactly what you said earlier, my wife's old saying was, which one should I turn back, you know, give back? And each and every one is a blessing. And, my wife passed away be 4 years in December. And as a result of having a big family, 2 of my daughters who I, you know, take care of me and watch over me. So it's such a blessing. And it actually, we actually became one heart and one flesh, my wife and I, because before she died, I was her caregiver for 2 years, and she took her last breath in my arms. So I just want to say, anybody who's anti-child or marriage, it's worth it. Thank you.
Sweet.
God bless.
Thank you. Yeah, it is. I think that's such a beauty. I mean, I don't know if our whole audience can hear, but you can. I mean, it's to love someone, to care for someone, to be a part of someone's life, and to
in a whole series of relationships.
Exactly.
It's not just that he loved his wife, but there were all these other people.
That's right.
That were all part of that.
That's right.
Still are.
Exactly. And the heart, as Pope Benedict used to say, is meant to be stretched.
Yes.
And it is, and there's no end to the stretch.
And, you know, there'll be things that are going to be difficult with more children.
Of course.
You know, especially today with the prices of universities being so high,
right.
you have to become very clever, and a lot of times kids have to figure this out on their own. You know, your parents can't take them. These right. are things that are difficult.
Right.
But, you know, back when I was growing up, my parents couldn't pay my tuition.
That's right.
You know, so you
myself figured, as well.
Yeah. And so you become clever and you work.
That's right.
And get it through. I'm afraid we're running flat out of time. I want to again encourage people to check out Human Life International for its various resources, and there are lots and lots of them. It is HLI.org, a place to go. Thank you very much for being back on the show. It's been too long since you've been here, and a lot of great information. And if you would join me in giving a blessing to our audience, may Almighty God bless you and keep you and cause His face to shine upon you and lead you in all of your ways by His peace. May Almighty God bless you, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Amen. Amen. And we can bring you Father Bouquet and his great work and all the other guests for this show and all the other programs we do only because this network is brought to you by you. Our Lord inspired Mother Angelica to have us not have advertisements, but seek you to keep us in between your gas bill, your electric bill, and your cable bill, and we'll be able to pay our bills too. God bless you and thank you.